Welcome to the Freedom Report, broadcasting from Alexandria, Virginia. Welcome to the Freedom Report. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. Who's Austin Peterson?
Liberty champion Austin Peterson, this Justin Bieber lookalike, and a powerful advocate for liberty.
Who's Austin Peterson? I'm an American. I love life, liberty, and family, but I'm not a conservative. I'm a hardcore libertarian. What am I doing here? I'm trying to restore the republic. The Libertarian Republic is a website aimed at furthering the ideas of economic freedom and personal liberty. I don't really care about parties. All I care about are ideas. And the one idea I care the most about? Freedom! That's right, pure freedom on the Freedom Report podcast.
Welcome to the Freedom Report. First, a message from our sponsors. The Libertarian Republic is brought to you in part by Amagi Metals. Amagi Metals is TLR's trusted metals dealer, and their mission is to help simplify the buying process of metals while illuminating the importance of financial responsibility and sound money. So, if you've been thinking about getting into metals, go to amagimetals.com and check them out. That's amagimetals.com. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report podcast. Thank you very much for tuning in today. I have a very special guest. Her name's Christine Krushelnitsky, and she's the executive director of Pro-Life Humanists. She recently authored a very controversial essay on patheos.com titled, "Yes, There Are Pro-Life Atheists Out There. Here's Why I'm One of Them." She's speaking to us from Canada. Thank you very much for joining the show, Christine.
Thank you for having me.
So I want to talk a little bit about your piece because, and first of all, I'm going to read a little bit from it just so people can get a little background on what your point of views are, and then I'd like to ask you a few questions, okay?
Sure.
So Christine writes, "There was a time when the lines seemed clearer and the slogan said everything. Pro-lifers were Jesus-loving Pope followers with a passion for sticking rosaries on ovaries, and atheists were quick to respond with, 'Keep your theology off my biology.' But then lines began to blur. Atheist and civil libertarian journalist Nat Hentoff said that being without theology isn't the slightest hindrance to being pro-life. Atheist philosophy professor Don Marquis declared abortion is immoral because it denies developing fetuses a future like ours. The host of CFI's Point of Inquiry, Robert Price, author of books like Jesus is Dead and The Case Against Christ, The Case Against the Case for Christ, called abortion second-degree murder on one of his podcasts. So what the heck are we atheists supposed to do with all this keep your rosary stickers right now? So Christine, I'm curious, tell us a little bit about your organization, Pro-Life Humanists. What is your organization all about?
Well, Pro-Life Humanists believes that as humanists that we should be caring for the least and the marginalized in our society. That's something that humanism has traditionally done for years. And we believe that if the unborn are human beings, then they also should be included in those that we are concerned about in the marginalized society.
Okay, so you say that fetuses should be recognized as human beings. Can you walk us through why that is?
Sure. Biologically speaking, the unborn are human beings from the moment of fertilization. We know this because they have human parents, and the principle of biogenesis tells us that living things reproduce after their own kind. We also know this by virtue of how the cells are different from the ovum and the sperm. There's a transformation and a transitional process that happens where there's a change of substance. We know that they are human from the moment of fertilization, and therefore, it doesn't make any sense for us to be denying them personhood and to be justifying the killing of these preborn human beings who are simply less developed than an older human being would be.
Yeah, in your piece, you go through all the sort of reasons that are put out there for why these human beings wouldn't have rights. You know, that they're not sentient. You know, they're not conscious. You know, which would, you know, mean that anyone who perhaps was turned into a vegetable, perhaps by an accident or so, they would basically be you'd have the right to kill them. And all the arguments against, you don't have the capacity to feel pain. Perhaps something should get the rights based on the capacity to feel pain. But some people are born with congenital disorders that they can't feel pain. And so then that makes it a problem. And so what you do is you process of elimination, you logically arrive at the position that all human beings, or even those who are preborn, are they're potential human beings, and they should have the same rights. And I guess, you know, if you think about things like faith healers, for example, you know, people look at that and they naturally see that as abhorrent. You know, they say, well, you know, this person who didn't seek treatment to heal their child, they didn't have a right to deny their child treatment, you know, and that sort of applies to the abortion debate in a sense that I believe. But, you know, you've gotten a lot of backlash for your views, mostly from the liberal side of things. In the United States, we have this sort of opposite view of liberalism where it doesn't mean freedom, it sort of means bigger government, but you get a lot of backlash from people amongst the liberal community in Canada. Feminists like Amanda Marcotte who gave you a very nasty response. What do you think it is about pro-life humanism that's especially upsetting to people on the liberal side of the perspective?
I think some of it just comes from the fact that people expect pro-life to be a religious issue. And when it's religious, it's a lot easier to just dismiss offhand because, oh, well, I'm not religious, therefore I don't have to listen to you. Mm-hmm. But when we are suddenly talking about principles of philosophy and of biology and things that are actually concrete that we can talk about rationally and reasonably without invoking any deities, mm-hmm. suddenly we have to start talking about the real issues at hand.
So you think that what happens is that when secular pro-life people come out, it takes away a big weapon that that most secularists can use in the fight for abortion rights?
I think that has a lot to do with it, yeah. I think there's a tendency towards thinking that reason is only something that belongs to those who are pro-choice and anti-God, and like we have this kind of gamut of things that you have to have in order to be considered a rational, reasonable person. And, you know, when you add somebody who doesn't quite fit that line, suddenly it's like, hey, this doesn't work anymore.
That's very funny. You know, it's interesting. You know, my political viewpoints and ethical viewpoints have evolved from a position where when I was much younger, I was a conservative Christian who was probably pro-life in the beginning, and then I started to evolve more towards pro-choice. And then I found myself becoming a secularist later in life as I developed my personal philosophy. And then my secular views were, I found, you know, it actually informed my views on the ethics of life, and I changed my position from being pro-choice to being pro-life. And then I just thought to myself, oh man, I am going to have such a hard time because there's got to be maybe two or three people out there who actually believe what I believe, which is, you know, I don't believe in a creator God, but I do believe that life is not necessarily sacred. I guess that's the wrong word, but I do believe that life is important and that it should be protected. And as a libertarian, I do believe in bodily autonomy. I do believe that people own their lives, that they have the right to do with their bodies as they wish, which would include things like, you know, taking drugs, for example. But I don't think that you have the right to harm anyone else. And I don't, go ahead.
One of the principles, in fact, of being a libertarian, as I understand it, is that do what you will, but harm none.
Right.
And if the unborn are human beings and they're members of our species, however small and young, abortion can be at the very least considered to be a harm and quite definitely a killing.
How did abortion become a feminist issue? I mean, it seems to me such a negative thing for women to take up the cudgel of, I guess you really, not the cudgel, but the scythe. You know, this is, you know, why is it that, do you think that, you know, it's become so tied in with, you know, to be pro-woman, you must be pro-abortion?
Mm-hmm. Well, that wasn't always the case. If you look back into the history of the early feminist movement, many of those feminists opposed abortion, and it wasn't just because it was dangerous and illegal back then. They really had, they saw abortion as a failing of women that, you know, women like Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton, they saw that abortion is an example of society having failed women. I believe it was the name slipped my mind, but she said that when a man steals to satisfy his hunger, it's a sign that as a society that we have failed him. And if a woman has to kill her child, it's a sign that either by poverty or by education that she has been greatly wrong. Huh. And that's a loose quote from her, but you know that completely summarizes it for me, that we've adopted since, you know, roughly the 40s and 60s this idea that you have to have abortion in order to be free, but we are already free. We are already, and we don't need this procedure in order to make ourselves free and equal. What women do need is support, is the respect of the people in our lives, community, people working with us, not just abandoning us to abortion and saying, well, you know, you can just take care of it. Unfortunately, abortion has become a Band-Aid solution where instead of actually dealing with the real issues at hand in society, we just cover them up and the problem goes away because, well, the child's gone, there's no issue anymore. However, the problem isn't really gone away. And it's just there kind of like a big hole in the ground for the next woman to fall into.
That's really, really very subtle, nuanced position. It's, you know, this debate is full of non-subtlety. You know, it's, you must be either completely, if you're pro-life, you've got to be, you must be this way. If you're pro-choice, you must be this way. And there's this really just, it's not that easy. It's not that easy of a subject, which is why I want to, I don't want to blindside you with this story that you may not have heard, but I'll try and summarize it for you really quick. There was a case in the state of Kansas here in the United States of a man who was charged with first-degree murder for tricking a woman into taking abortion drugs. Basically, this man crushed up a pill that caused a woman to miscarry, and he's now being seen as a murderer. But think about it this way: if you're pro-choice, is he really a murderer? You know, in the sense, you know, think of it from an ethical standpoint. You know, if you believe that, you know, a woman has a right to kill the child in the womb, then isn't what the man has done, they can't rightly claim that as murder, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of that kind of stuff going on where we're having, you know, there are different values and ideas. On the one hand, if it's an abortion, then people suddenly say, oh, then, you know, it's fine for the woman to make this decision to terminate this preborn child, but then we have other laws that seem to want to respect the preborn life. So there's definitely a dichotomy in what's going on.
Right. Yeah. It's very interesting how like these two different ethical sets have to sort of conform to the law, because when it comes down to it, you know, whoever's adjudicating this case, you know, their own ethical viewpoints on abortion are necessarily going to have to inform the case, because, you know, if you're pro-life, then you obviously, you think it definitely is murder. But if you were a pro-choice judge, for example, you cannot ethically rule that this is murder, because again, it all he simply did was what millions of women do every day. Anyways, I don't want to get on that because that's a very esoteric topic. But I want to talk about the issue of government, because when it comes to the issue of government in abortion, you know, we talked about subtlety and nuance earlier. The pro-lifers are seen as wanting to ban all abortions, and the pro-choicers are seen as wanting to legalize all abortions. Now, as a libertarian, I find myself very conflicted because I am very opposed to government intervention into the lives of individuals, especially private individuals. But, you know, that doesn't mean that I think that government shouldn't be involved in murder or something like that, for example. So I'm curious, where do you come down on the issue of government intervention into abortion? Are you someone who says that, you know, because you're pro-life, that the government has a duty to step in and to ban it?
I guess the question is, the government have a duty to step in and ban other forms of murder?
Mm-hmm.
And if so, then it doesn't make any sense that we would say, well, when it comes to human beings of a lesser stage of development or of a lesser size and lesser, you know, who are more dependent, that we can suddenly say, well, you know, it's okay if it's a personal choice, you know, I'll just turn around and let you do it. You know, I think the law definitely has a duty to say there are certain personal choices that you don't have the right to have. Mm-hmm. You don't have the right to privately abuse your children.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have the right to privately rape someone.
Right.
There are certain choices that we know cause bodily harm to other human beings. And if abortion causes bodily harm and death to another human being, then by all means, the law should be stepping in and saying, no, that's not a permissible choice.
Viewpoint is perfectly ethically consistent, and I commend you for it. However, I have to ask, just because I this is a difficult question that I struggled with, is do the ends justify the means in this situation? And the reason I ask is because if the government must step in to stop abortions, then it must necessarily use terrible means to stop women from doing it, and they must also cause the secondary negative effect of causing women to use terrible means to seek abortions that we know they'll have. So whether you and I are philosophically consistent on this won't change the reality of the great evils that will be done if we don't fight it. So are you the type of person that says that no matter what, that the ends do justify the means?
Well, first of all, I believe in making abortion unthinkable and unnecessary. Mm-hmm. I think that's the first step that we do need to be taking. Where there have been pro-life laws that have come into place, we've often seen, you know, women feeling desperate and running to have illegal abortions. Most of the time it's because we've done it in such an order that we haven't actually addressed the problems that lead women to have abortions in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So without actually believing that, you know, this is a priority that we have to address as society and finding better solutions, you know, whether it's national daycare or enforcing certain policies that will help women have the support that they need to be able to work and continue a pregnancy and go to school and continue a pregnancy and have a child. You know, all these circumstances and poverty and not having a living wage, those things need to be addressed. And I think what's happening right now is that there is no incentive to address them because mm-hmm. we can just cover over these problems with abortion and just walk away. Once we recognize that the unborn are human beings, then we have the obligation to say, hey, let's do something about these problems.
I totally agree. Christine Krushelnitsky, what a fantastic interview. I really appreciate what you're doing. I encourage people, the listeners, to go and check out the pro-life humanist group. They're doing great work. And thank you so very much for your time today.
You're very welcome.